Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello and welcome to Insane in the Membrane's top 10 biggest episodes in no particular order. We're building up to our third anniversary. That's it, 3 wonderful podcasting years. We brought you some amazing guests in that time, but we wanted to go through some of the best ones. I mean, they're all brilliant. Every episode has been fantastic. But we just want to bring up some of the ones we thought people might be interested in again, because they get buried. There's so many podcasts out there. We've got so many episodes. I wanted to bring these up again. And I mean, there's been 150 episodes. So do you know what I mean? It's a lot to trawl through, I know, for some people. And so some of these names get lost. So we thought we'd bring them back up again. And so here we are. Also, I'd like to say a big thank you to our Patreons, because again, we couldn't do this without you. You really are spectacular human beings. Thank you so much for all that you do. We've got patrons like Ellie Freeman. I'll tell you what as well, on her Instagram, we talk about music all the time. She's got great taste in music. It's a nice one, Ellie. And also, I'm going to have a go at this now. I apologise because I have not seen this name before, and so I'm going to give it a go, and I apologise in advance if I get this wrong. I'm going to say, oh, here we go, right? It's Quillon O'Lion. I hope that's right. It's Quillon or Quillon. Quillon O'Lion. I hope that's right, mate. And I apologise if it's not. Do drop me a line and I'll do it properly. It's a beautiful name. I've never seen that name before. And that's not you, that's me. I should be more educated. But thank you. Thank you so much for everything you do. This is another episode from April 2020. And it was the first UK lockdown. It was in full effect. You know, we were all in amongst it. And he was at home with his family. And you know, the thing is, he's one of the busiest people on the television. He's everywhere. He's doing everything. And bless him, we kept saying, let's get you on. He's like, yeah, we will. I'd love to. And then a couple of times, like, he rang me. He's like, Rich, let's sort this out. And I'm like, yeah, mate, this is really cool. Because you don't want to pester people, especially someone when they're as busy as this guy. So for him to be ringing me and going, yeah, let's do it. Stop mucking around, let's do it. And I'm like, all right, yeah, let's sort it out. And we did. We managed to do it. And it was a great chat again. He's a wonderful human being, brilliant comedian, just a top, top dude. So coming up now is Ramesh Ranganathan. How's that?
Great. As long as Ramesh can hear, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I can hear you. Sound beautiful, mate.
Wicked. And you, man. It's lovely to hear your voice finally.
You too.
How you find it with the kids? It must be.
They must be having
a great time.
Well, they initially, it was absolute euphoria in our house when school kicked out. Do you know what I mean? and they thought it was just going to be extended holiday. So we had a chat with them about how we're going to be trying to, in some way, simulate their educational experience at home. So there was obviously the crash of that. For them emotionally.
Yeah,
and then
dad's a teacher as
exactly,
well.
So
now to the floor.
Yeah, but last week, towards the end of last week, I would say that their enthusiasm for listening to anything we had to say was rock bottom. And then this week, they've had a bit of a second wind. I mean, it's been all right. But the truth is that, you know, in your head, you think that homeschooling is going to be you being a teacher, but it's not. It's you failing to log into a website that the school has sent home while your kids shout at you. Do you know what I mean? That's basically what homeschooling is.
Totally different batch of skills. I think that's what's happening with everybody, because we're all trying to do stuff online, and it's showing up the fact that none of us are built for this. We need other people to be like, I've got producer Paul to go, right, plug that in there. do that, and then Jade comes in and goes, get out of the way, you idiot, and put that in there. And so, yeah, I'm just flapping around going, oh, where do I talk? Do I talk to someone now?
I know.
Yeah, must be the same with you. Just
yeah, I think it's with the kids as well. It's kind of, you're trying to stay on top of it with them, but also not looking too stressed because you don't want that to... You don't want to transfer that to them. It's obviously a weird time, and we want to protect them as much as we can from any anxiety to do with that. Do you know what I mean?
But of course,
but then they get too casual, and I think fuck it, they could do with a little bit of anxiety. Do you know what I mean? Jesus Christ!
To start showing them pictures of supermarkets, empty shelves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we don't know if this will go back to normal. You know, boys,
get off the table. Do your work. Do they have a grasp? How old are your kids?
10, 8 and 5.
So have they got a grasp of what's happening or vaguely?
Yeah, I mean, our eldest son is pretty across it. And in fact, he's picked me up on a couple of things. Because I think everyone's attitudes have changed a bit because, you know, even the people that were most in tune with this and how serious it was going to be, I don't think anybody could have quite predicted it was going to turn our lives upside down in the way that it has done. But I remember when it was first starting to happen, we took the kids to the cinema, and this is obviously much, much pre-lockdown and even inklings of lockdown before anybody wants to tweet me. But we pulled up and the car park was empty, and I said, oh, it's one of the benefits. And then Theo, our oldest son, just went, Dad, it's a global pandemic and I don't think you should be saying comments like that. And I was like, all right, mate.
Keep it light.
Yeah, exactly. But the other two, the younger two, just couldn't give a shiny shit. Do you know what I mean? I mean, they know the words and they know it's something that's going on. But as far in terms of, they're very zen in terms of they look at things how they directly affect them. They don't think about what might happen. They don't think about what could happen. So currently what is happening is that they're having every day off. So for them, they're loving life. Do you know what I mean?
And I think that's the same with all of us. We have days like we've been locked down now. This is our third week.
Because
Jade's got really bad asthma. So as soon as it started happening, we were like, right, let's lock ourselves away. And then, you know, you have days like we were being creative and we were running around and we were laughing and we were making food and that. But then I think the last couple of days you kind of go, yeah, this is actually deadly serious and it's only going to get it's going to get worse before it gets better. And so we have these days where we're just low. We're just like, how do we get through this? And then you get another wave of positivity and you're up again. And that must be difficult for you because you've got to kind of hold the whole family up, if you like.
The thing is, I find with these things is you've got to recognize when you're starting to go wrong, and you know, mentally I mean, and adapt.
So
for example, when this all started to happen, you know, we were engaging with it, but we were dealing with the day to day, which is making sure the kids are all right and figuring out what we're going to do and blah blah blah. Anyway, when it all first started to kick off, I think everybody's gone through this experience, but I had one night in particular that was really bad where the kids had gone to bed, Leisha and I had watched a bit of telly, and then she went to sleep. And then I made the mistake of deep diving into the news and the figures and stuff. And I managed to send myself into an absolute panic spiral. And it wasn't, and the thing was, is that, you know, that can happen. It's the worst time it can happen is, you know, I'm lucky enough to be in a house with a family. But for me, you know, Lisa was asleep. I'm not going to wake her up to say, oh, by the way, I've just head fucked myself. Do you mind waking up and talking me down out of it? Do you know what I mean? So it's those things where you go, okay, well, from now on, I'm not going to have my phone in with me. I'm not going to start looking at that type of shit when I'm going to go to bed. Do you know what I mean? And also I'm going to go out of my way to look at other stuff or you know, you might even be looking for positive news and stuff. Like, I know it sounds a bit wanky, but the truth is you've got to look after yourself in that way. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. We've done that as well. Jade's gone down these dark, dark tunnels, looking at all the facts and the figures and then this and that. And then I've turned around and gone, babe, listen, let's go on TikTok for 20 minutes.
You like it
on there. Let's go and so trying to keep each other. We're keeping each other positive. We've also got Paul Sweeney, fellow comedian and hairdresser, staying with us.
Oh,
so
yeah. Well, I saw Paul recently in New York, actually, because I was doing a few shows in New York.
He said. How were the shows out there? Were they good?
They were good, but do you know what? To be honest, the shows were great. I mean, it was great fun, but it was all starting to... New York was starting to get nervous about Corona. It was all starting to kick off. So it was a weird time to be there, to be honest with you. But no, it's
yeah, fun. Mate of mine was out there as well, and he said it was weird seeing Broadway shut down.
Yeah.
Times Square shut down.
Yeah.
And you're like, we've seen all this in movies, but you never in a million years thought that we'd be experiencing this sort of thing.
It is crazy. But do you know the other thing I find so mad is how everybody went from, I'm talking about in the UK and it looks like in America as well, everyone went from being quite casual about it to shitting themselves. Because I was thinking like in New York, when I was in New York, I went to Times Square when it was still open, and there's loads of people milling about, but it started at that stage. Do you know what I mean? So it's just that nobody had fully got to, or certainly the authorities hadn't got to grips with how seriously we were going to have to take this. Do you know what I mean? So you sort of think, well, that was it. Now I think about that and I think, well, that was insane. Do you know what I mean? For that to be open up when it was all out in the open. It seems crazy. And even now I've got such a mental state about it that now, even when I'm watching like box sets or whatever, I think, fucking hell, they're a bit close. Do you know what I mean? You can't help. You're so in that mindset now. Do you know what I mean? That anybody near each other, you think, Jesus Christ, guys, come on.
I know. I went out the other day. I went out to get some essentials. I went in the evening because I thought it'd be a bit quieter.
Yeah.
And we were still doing that. Like, we were keeping ourselves 2 metres apart.
Right.
And we were all queuing quietly. And then you get these maniacs that they'd already sort of cancelled their own lives. They're already pissed all the time. They're already, like, they've got no teeth. They're already, like, it's quite a nihilism to these people.
Yeah.
They're just weaving in and out of everyone else. They're going, yes, so. We're like, mate, you got to move away a little bit. And he's like, I don't give a shit. And there's a... And you're like, some people are taking it really seriously. People are still believing that it's like the flu. It's a real, there hasn't been any like one concrete thing. They've gone, right, this is what it is. This is what will happen. They've all been, like the government have been a little bit vague about it all, going, well, you know, it might be like the flu. You might want to just back off a little bit. You might want to do this. You might want to, instead of going, right, keep away from everybody. You're going to die. You know what I mean? It's a weird way they've done it.
Well, even when, and you know, obviously I don't want to get too political, but even when Boris Johnson made the lockdown announcement, it didn't, I know there are people on Twitter just going, so are we on lockdown now? Are we on lockdown?
Yeah.
Because you are allowed to go jogging and you know, it just seems so, it seems so vague and all over the place. And I think part of that, you know, I'm not saying that I'm desperate for an authoritarian state or anything like that, but
no.
It has led to a bit of ambiguity with regards to people's attitudes towards it, you know, and we went out for a walk the other day. Like, we're trying to get the kids out every day just so they don't go crazy. But you do start to feel slightly aggressive towards people who aren't respecting that distance. And it's not even about us being selfish. We're not walking around thinking all these other people are unclean. It's a social responsibility. And I went around, like, I lent my mum my car. Like, because she crashed her car.
Right.
This is pre-corona. She crashed her car. There's a whole different set of issues to unpack there. But anyway, the long and the short of it is she needed a car to get to work. She's a key worker. So I dropped my car off to her. And she said to me, how do I put petrol in it? And then she came out to check. And I ran away from her to stay away from her. But the way she sees it is I'm being this prick that thinks that I don't want to get whatever lurgy she's got. But I'm saying to her, look, I'm trying to look after you.
Exactly.
Like, you're more actually, statistically, I didn't say this, but you're statistically, you're more at risk than I am. I'm trying to protect you. The way that you're like, but she took it like, I don't want to catch this. Get the hell away from me, woman. Do you know what I mean? But it's just that, attitudinal difference. Do you know what I mean? People, you know, that whole thing of like that bloke going, I don't give a shit. Well, you know, there's nothing, you know, that whole thing, because we're so used to stiff upper lip and just carry on and we can troop through. That's not what this is about, man. Do you know what I mean?
No.
It's not, you're not going to power through this. It's like, you've got to follow the instructions, you know?
Yeah. You got, and that, like you say, it's looking out for other people.
Yeah.
Like we've had symptoms, so we've just kept away from everyone. So we're like, in case we infect someone that's got a weaker immune system to us. I mean, I dropped some shopping off to my youngest son over in Kent the other day, and I left it on his doorstep, and we were talking to each other through the front room window. And it, And even he was like, he goes, I'm not coming out, Dad. I'm like, no, you're fine. I don't want you to come out. I don't want you to stay there. But it was heartbreaking, but it had to be done.
Yeah.
We had to do it. It's how it's got
to
be.
It's such a weird thing to go through, though, isn't it? I mean, that is, you think to yourself, well, because my instinct is, well, fuck it, it's my mum. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? You sort of think, like, it's family. Like, for you, going to see your son, you think to yourself, well, I should be able to, like, we don't have to obey the rules. It's my son. I'm going to go hug my son. But you can't think like that. It's a way of thinking that I don't think most of us in our lifetimes have ever had to experience. And so that's why it's such an adjustment, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I think in the last few years, people have been shown to be more self-centered than they should be or usually are. And then this on the top of all that now has really shone a light on, like, the amount of, like, the stockpiling that people did. And they, and you know, are not really giving a shit about people that don't have time to go shopping because they're too busy looking after the relatives that are ill. And it's really shone a light on humanity, I think. I think a lot of people have said this. I think this might do us a favour. In some respects, it might make us realise how privileged we are, and hopefully change our behaviours.
I wonder if it might, you know, but it's difficult, you know, with this, because obviously everybody, you know, people have been talking about this stockpiling, and people are doing it, and I've seen it, and obviously we've all seen it.
Yeah,
and you kind of I flip between being annoyed at people for being so short-sighted and so selfish that they would do that. But then also think to myself, well, I don't know how well-informed everybody is. I mean, I'm actively looking to find out what's going on and what we should be doing, as are a lot of people. But certain people just want to disengage from that. And I do respect that. I respect if you just want to go, well, I'm told what I need to be told and the rest of it I don't want to know about. And so you do sort of think, well, if that information hasn't been disseminated properly, you are going to get people who are just shitting themselves and think, fucking hell, I'm in the shop now. I'm worried about my family. And then they just end up, they don't even think about the knock-on effect of that. Do you know what I mean? They might not even know what the situation is. And so it's kind of that thing where you think, well, I don't know. There's so many grey areas with regards to this. And I hope that, you know, at the end of it, we sort of all come out. I totally agree with you. I think one of the things that might come out of this is an increased sense of empathy amongst society. And that would be a nice thing to see, I guess.
Yeah, I hope so. That would be a nice thing to do. Yeah. You know, it's a shit way of having to do it, but hopefully,
you certainly wouldn't do it by design. But if that was an accidental fallout of it, then that'd be great.
Yeah, a nice little byproduct of this madness. But it's nice that you've got people around you can talk. I thought that's what's happening as well. I'm hearing from people that I've not spoken to in like 10 years. I'm getting messages from people. People are really starting to be there for each other and just going, look, man, I'm really sorry. Life got in the way.
Yeah.
You know, and then people that I've had beef with, you know, not nothing major, but just people like, oh, I don't really need to speak to that person. Bridges are getting rebuilt and it's a nice thing. And you've got your wife as well. And are you finding it easy to talk to each other about stuff?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Lisa and I have been guilty, as I think a lot of couples are, of sometimes not fully engaging with each other, even when we're at home together. You know, you might be looking at your phone or you're doing whatever. And I think that, you know, every now and again, to be honest with you, I'm talking about non-global pandemic times. But normally we'll check ourselves and go, hold on a minute. We've not really been chatting to each other properly. Let's make an effort and blah, blah, blah. And like, let's, you know, put the phone somewhere else or whatever.
Yeah.
And, but actually, weirdly, this, because of the nature of this situation and because it does cause you worry and anxiety, it has actually, weirdly, made us, you do end up chatting to each other more and like you do end up talking about, you've been very, very, I guess it lends itself to being very open about what your worries and concerns are about it. And, you know, a lot of talking about what we should do with the kids and how she's feeling about it, how I'm feeling about it. And again, I'm not saying that I'm glad that Corona happened so that my wife and I can get on now. But what I mean is that, you know, we've both been in a very fortunate position where we can talk to each other about it. And to be honest with you, and also check each other sometimes, because there's been times when maybe I've thought Lisa hasn't been taking it seriously enough, and maybe Lisa thinks I haven't been. You know, that's sort of, you're almost each other's checks and balances, you know, you're keeping each other's checks and balances in line, where you're sort of going, well, actually, hold on, I think this is actually quite a big deal, and you probably shouldn't go and make that visit, or whatever, you know, little things like that.
Yeah, it's like Jade and I, we were having couples counselling before all this kicked off.
Right.
And funnily enough, since this has happened, we've actually been more, a lot of the stuff that we were learning in the couples counselling, we've been able to apply to this, you know, being locked in together for 3 weeks now. Yeah. And it's, whereas before we'd be shouting and hollering and screaming at each other, we've actually, we'll have a moment where we'll go, listen, that what you just did, that really annoyed me. And I don't want to be a dick about it, but I just want to point out that is a bit annoying. And then she'd be like, absolutely, I understand what you're saying. And then we're having proper discussions, which is very nice.
He's full of shit, Ramesh. we've been fucking at each other. Ignore this fucking
We have not. We have been doing really well. We have been really well.
No, we've been doing fine.
We had one day the other day where Jade's gone off now. Oh, we had one day where we had Sunday, we ended up having a proper tear up.
Right.
And Paul was in the other room. Paul Sweeney hid in his room.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then afterwards, we were like, well, we probably shouldn't do that. But that's been one day as opposed to all the time.
Yeah. But you know what, man? One of the things that this sounds like, I remember when I used to be a teacher, when I was teacher training, one of the things that they told us during teacher training is that if you can speak to a kid and disassociate their behavior from them as a person, they will accept anything, you know, like, so if a kid's been like shouting out in your class or whatever, rather than saying you're messing up this lesson or you're disrupting my lesson, if you say you're shouting out is disrupting my lesson, their level of acceptance of that is so much more, because you're separating the kid from the behavior. And weirdly, I do think that is true of everything, you know, like, I think, you know, in relationships, and when I'm dealing with our kids and when Lisa and I are chatting to each other, listen, Rich, I don't want to put you under any illusion that we've got things right. I mean, fuck it.
No, of course not.
We fall out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean,
you're human beings, mate. Yeah. You're human beings.
But I do think that those things where you can go, you can go, my being a prick annoying Lisa is not me that she thinks I'm a prick. It's just that thing that I did.
Yes.
Fucked her off. Do you know what I mean? And it's that kind of thing your ego wants to defend yourself. Do you know what I mean? And so when somebody comes at you about something, you immediately think you're getting at me, and then you kick back, and it's that, and that's your default. We're hardwired almost to behave like that. Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of,
absolutely.
I'm not saying I've cracked it. I am absolutely abysmal to be in a relationship with. I'm pretty sure of that. But but the truth is that kind of trying to step out of that way of thinking is helpful, I think. But I certainly haven't mastered it.
No, me either. I think, like you say, like when we're arguing and Jay, or say, for example, Jay's kicking off and doing this, that and the other.
Yeah.
And I have to turn around and go, right. It's never, it's always me. I have to, in my head, I go, right, it's not personal. Something else is happening that's made her angry. And then it's trying to come at it that way, trying to go, right, what is it then? She's glaring at me now.
but often, mate, but the truth is like sometimes all it takes is, like, I've been in the middle of like expressing my views to Lisa. And then I put myself in her shoes and I think, I do completely get it from her point of view. I know that sounds simple, but it's a matter of, I don't know, getting out of your raised emotions to try and actually look at it logically. But I mean, that helps. But the truth is, when you're tired, when you're anxious, when you're worried about shit, when stuff's piling on and you feel like, you know, it's getting a bit overwhelming, you haven't got the wherewithal to put those skills and techniques into motion. Do you know what I mean? You just fucking react. You just shoot from the hip.
Yeah, man.
So, you know, it's easier said than done most of the time.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I was saying this, I was talking to someone just now before we were doing this, and I said to them, you know, it's there's no destination with being a human being. You're just always trying to improve and be better and trying to keep the shit bits to a minimum all the way through your life, and then one day you're not here anymore, and that's what you're always trying to do. So you'll have a handle on it one day, but then the next day you might, you know, like your sugar levels are low or something else has pissed you off.
Man,
it's so complicated, isn't it? It's so complicated. But I think communication is so important. And that's all we can do is try and talk to each other and just, I don't know, man, it's hard. It's hard, isn't it?
It is, but you know, in the same way, like I always, you know, my dad passed away for a few years ago, and so my mum's on her own, and I know that I've been guilty before all this happened. I've been guilty of calling my mum functionally, you know, just going, "You're right," and just having a quick check in with her, because I know that you're supposed to do that. You know that's what almost dutifully, rather than wanting to chat to her. Whereas now, I think because I know I'm not going to see her, we're actually having proper chats, you know, and that does happen. That has happened. You know, I'm not saying that's the first time it's ever happened, but I think you take those, I don't know, it makes you take it for granted a little bit less. I think, you know, that's certainly the effect it's had on me.
Yeah. And I think, cause my dad's 74 now.
Right.
And mum said yesterday, she put a thing on Facebook going, "Our dad was gardening and now he's got a septic finger. He's had to go up to the hospital." And I'm like, "Why are you gardening? What, you know?" Whereas before I'd be like, "Oh, these idiots out in the garden."
Yeah.
But now I'm like, "Dad, you could die from that now. What are you doing? Sit down." So we're having proper conversations as well. But because before I was like, "Oh, I better ring my mum. I haven't rung her for a couple of weeks."
Exactly. Yeah. You do that. I mean, you sort of, you know, it's a horrible thing to admit, but sometimes I do think, well, I should phone mum. Do you know what I mean? And so you do it, and then you have the chat, and it's always, don't get me wrong, I never think, "Oh, fucking hell, this is a chore." I do enjoy chatting to her, but
yeah, of course.
You're not doing it because you want to. You're doing it because you feel like you should, and then once you've done it, you almost tick it off a list, which is not how it should be. Do you know what I mean?
But you seem like you've got a nice relationship with your mum anyway. Like the stuff I've seen you do on telly.
Yeah,
things like that. So that's nice.
Yeah, my mum's great, man. I mean, the truth of it is that my dad was not great to my mum, and they were very close by the time he passed away. But he put her through inadvertently, not deliberately, but he did put her through a lot of shit. And she, for a long time, single-handedly raised my brother and I. And so, you know, I owe her the absolute world. So there is nothing. Man. I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because like, sometimes Lisa, she'll say to me, "Fucking hell, like your mum could literally ask you anything and you'd go and do it." But to me, I think to myself, well, I owe her so much. Do you know what I mean? I'm probably bad. If my mum said to me that she wasn't sure how to put petrol in her car that she'd been driving for years and years and years, I'll go around and do it for her. And then Lisa would be like, "Come on, Rom." Do you know what I mean? I think she might have just wanted you to go around, to be honest with you. Do you know
what I mean? Well, I think that was the same. My dad's the same. I mean, my dad's still with us, and he had a terrible upbringing.
Right.
And I think the shadow of that loomed large over our life when he was growing up. He's a very angry man when we were growing up. He's a diamond as well in other areas, but... Yeah. He was a bit moody inadvertently took it out on the family. Shit that had gone on with him when he was a kid. So, we're getting on better now, but he's been a very angry man for a very long time. And it's a weird, because at the same time, you go, "It's me dad. I still love him. And he's done enough good stuff as well."
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that was the same with your dad.
Yeah. Well, the truth is, you know, my dad, he cheated on my mum a lot, and he was having this long-term relationship with another woman, and he ended up going to prison, and we were living in a bed and breakfast for a bit. Went through the council house system.
Oh, you know? Wow, man.
But the thing is that I really got angry with my dad as a result of all of that, because, you know, you can't help feeling like he's rejecting the family or whatever. And then I remember when he came out of prison, my mum and my dad, they made up. And I remember coming back from uni, and I'd become, as a result of the things that had happened in the house, I'd become a bit of an arsehole as a kid, you know, a little bit sort of kicking against everything. So I was coming back from uni, being a bit inconsiderate, you know how teenagers can be or whatever.
Yeah,
so,
of course, man.
And I remember my dad was obviously pissed off. He'd seen me like coming in whenever I felt like it and just being a bit of a twat. He picked me up on it. And I turned around and I absolutely like unloaded on him. Do you know what I mean?
Just
like, "You've never been here. You fucked off and did this, that, and the other. And then you come back here and you think you can tell me," you know, really horrible.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Shit that if one of my kids said that to me, I would be devastated. Do you know what I mean? If I, and so I remember having that go at him, and then I left. like walked out of the house or whatever, and they just let me go because obviously thought I was like I'd lost my shit or whatever. And then we never mentioned that conversation again. And then as time went on, my dad and I made up and we became very, very close again. And when by the time my dad passed away, we had a very good relationship. But the thing is, after he passed away, I still thought about that conversation and I cried about it as one of the things that I regretted saying to him.
Oh, really?
Even despite the fact that I'd made that we'd made amends and, you know, we were very, very close. And I think I just thank God that he hadn't passed away when that was still, do you know what I mean? If I had not made things up with him, I would have been so, I don't know what that would have done to me. Do you know what I mean? It was like,
oh mate. It's funny, isn't it? Cause it was like, but judging by what you've just said and then where that feeling came from, I mean, it was justified, but you still felt guilty.
Well, it's just it's because I don't know. You can't help thinking, you know, I don't know why my dad made the decisions he did. And I don't know what pressures he was under. I don't know what he was going through, any of those things. And I'm not saying that justifies how he behaved at all.
No.
But I think that regardless of what he did, the way that I spoke, I mean, it was brutal. Do you know what I mean? It's probably the most brutal thing I've ever said to anybody. Do you know what I mean? That monologue to him. Mm, and you know, so I think, regardless of what he did, in my heart, I feel like he didn't really deserve to hear that from
him. I remember doing a similar thing with my dad, and I saw it was a moment where there was the power dynamic changed between us.
Right.
When I'd split up with the mother of my kids, I was living back there for a bit, and he came in, and I was sat in his chair, and I was on the phone.
Yeah.
It's about 20 years ago now, and he came in from work, and he looked at me, and he mouthed like, "You're in my chair." And I lost my shit. And
right.
I just went, you're in your fucking chair. I threw the chair across the room.
Yeah.
And I really lost my shit because I was going through this other stuff.
Yeah.
And all that sort of thing. And then I stood up and he went to go for me. And he goes, "I'm not having this." And I went, "Yeah, we're going to fucking do." And he flinched. And at first, I cried my eyes out because I saw he went from being my dad to this like little man. And I went out and I remember driving my car off 1,000 miles an hour, driving off, just crying. I couldn't control myself.
Yeah.
And I was just heartbroken and went back afterwards and said to him, "Dad, listen, regardless of anything, I should never, ever talk to you in that way. Like you've just said, regardless of anything that's gone before, you're my dad and you never, I should have more respect.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry." Yeah. So I get it, man.
You're so mad with the parent thing. I mean, this is a much more, lighter example than the one you just gave, but like, I don't want to trivialize what you just said, but I remember the first, my mum used to like hit us a fair bit, right? Like not hard, but she used to give us, you know, Sri Lankan upbringing, do you know what I mean? Anyway,
I don't know, that was the same with us as well. My mum's got some Sri Lankan.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. She's got some cultural influences or something. But I remember the first time my mum was chasing me around a bedroom and because the bedroom was like, was messy and she tripped over and fell down. And I remember thinking, shit, I didn't know mum could fall down. I didn't know she could trip over. I just thought my parents were so perfect. I didn't see them as people. Do you know what I mean? You see them as these infallible beings that always get everything right and their judgment is impeccable and all that. You go through that. As a kid, that's what you believe. And then obviously, as you get older, you realise that they're just regular people. Do you know what I mean? They make mistakes and stuff like that. But it's such a weird thing, isn't it? Those little changes in your perception of your parents are so mad.
Oh, mate. Yeah, like you say, they go from being your parents that know everything to being human beings that are just trying to get by themselves. Yeah. They're still working it out. I remember arguing with my mum. I was in my brother's bedroom and he had a bed with no legs on it. So the bed was low down.
Right.
And we were arguing. And dad came up to tell us to pack it in. So again, I was just an arsehole teenager. But mum stepped back and didn't see the bed and she fell onto the bed.
Right.
And I went to help her up. Oh, shit, mum, you're right. And dad thought I'd pushed her over. And he came flying in and he's hanging on to me. He goes, "How fucking dare you? How dare you?" I'm like, "No, I didn't. I didn't. She fell over the bed. And then mum's on top. He goes, "I fell over the bed. He's like, proper cartoon moment. It was terrifying.
Yeah.
But in that moment, it was like, we all just went from, we're all just human beings trying to just get through this shit, man.
I know.
Yeah.
And then I sort of, you think about how open to be about that with your kids. Because on occasion every day, I'd make a wrong judgment about something to do with like something, the way I should say, something I should say to them, or disciplining them or whatever like that. And I remember thinking to myself, well, my mum and dad never said this to me, but I have on occasion apologised to my kids for getting it wrong. Do you know what I mean? Or like, I remember like giving my eldest son like a real bollocking about something, and then it became apparent that he had behaved absolutely appropriately for what he thought was going on. Do you know what I mean? Like in the same way.
Okay.
And so then I had to go and say to him, I just made a wrong judgment call. And I just said to him, I realised why you did what you did. And I realised why you thought it was all right to do that. And I said to him, I just got to hold my hands up. I'm not always going to get it right. At the same time, you sort of think, well, that could be a good thing to do, but also I could also be undermining every single future time I tell him off for something, because he's just thinking to himself, oh, this prick's going to realise he's made a mistake and comes to have to apologise later on.
Yeah, just undermined your authority completely. That's it now, done. But it's funny with my kids, I was very, when they were little, I was a very angry man.
Right.
For whatever reason. And then I got it wrong a lot. And I remember recently saying to my, because they're 22 and 28 now, my lads. And I said to them, I said, look, I feel, I have to say this, I could have been better. I feel I could have been better. They're like, Dad, what are you talking about? You were fine.
Yeah.
They go, oh, maybe I'm overthinking it then. Maybe I'm putting too much pressure on myself as well. But that, like you say, being honest with your kids and having that, opening up those avenues of dialogue is very important.
Yeah,
it's good that you can do it, man.
Yeah, I think that it's a thin line though between you want to be open with them and you want to be honest. This is my opinion, by the way. I'm not saying I'm no authority on this, but you want to be open with them, but at the same time, you aren't their mates. Do you know what I mean? And I think that it's that thing of like, I sometimes feel like I go the other way too much, and sometimes they see me as like a laugh. And I think, well, I've still got to be the person that's guiding them at the same time. Do you know what I mean? And I've got to have them. It's a weird one. It's a weird line to walk, you know, and everybody has their own way of doing it. And the truth is, I don't think I've picked up any consistency at all. Sometimes I'm an absolute laugh. Then the next thing, I'm bollocking him and they're going, oh, very funny, Dad. And, oh, shit, no, serious. Completely unpredictable.
That's what they want. Yeah, Dad's a nutter.
Yeah, exactly. He's a fucking maniac. One day I'll laugh at that. The next day I'll smash you in the face. You just can't tell with him.
Oh, man. It was like, because my lads used to come over to mine at weekends. And so if their mum had said anything like, look, they've been doing this, they've been doing that, I wasn't ever going to tell them off, because I didn't want them to be coming to me and then telling them off and then sending them home again.
That's the pressure. I've got mates that are in that situation, and you just, what you want is to be fun. Do you know what I mean? You want them to want to come and see you. Do you know what I mean? Objectively.
Exactly.
It's such a hard one.
But now I'm in that position. Now they're older. Now they're actually grown men. I think we're in that position, like we talked about with our parents. Like sometimes they ring me because they think they have to. It's now come full circle. Now I better check in with Dad. Like my eldest will ring up and he's like, all right, Dad. I'm like, yeah, you're all right. Yeah, good, Dad. Just checking in. All right then, cheers then. And I can't do what my dad used to do. I go, do you want to talk to mum?
There's always my
dad's the best for that. I ring him up and then he's like, yeah, good. Here's mum. And you're like, all right, thanks, Dad.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This is the thing. I haven't. Now we're getting older, and we don't have to talk about this if you don't want to.
No, no, totally fine. Totally fine.
Talking about your dad passing on.
Yeah.
Have you got your head around that? Is that I'm always curious because I haven't had anyone really close to me go yet. And
yeah.
So I don't know how it feels. And it is it something you've got your head around?
I don't know. Is
no.
It's such a weird when dad died. I obviously, you know, you're completely distraught and you react in the textbook ways you expect someone to react. And then for ages after that, I didn't cry at his funeral. I wasn't crying every day like my mum was. Nobody picked me up on it or anything. It's just everybody reacts in different ways, don't they?
And yeah. So,
but then what would happen is I'd get caught by surprise. Like I remember years ago, I was driving back from a Just the Tonic gig. And I got involved in a car smash. I had to pull the car over and the police came and took me to Watford Gap Services. And then my dad came and picked me up and took me home, like in the middle of the night. And then like months after my dad had died, like maybe a year over a year, I was driving to another gig and I went past Watford Gap Services and I remembered that moment and I just started crying. Like, you know, you just suddenly...
Mate, yeah.
And so it's all these little, like every now and again, these little triggers happen that sort of, that kick off a memory and stuff. And
yeah.
I don't know, it's a weird one. You never really fully, I mean, it's little things that you start to get sad about. I mean, we've got recordings of Dad, but you start to forget what he sounded like completely, you know, his voice.
Yeah.
It's not crystal clear as it was in my head, you know, and little things like that. And I don't know, man, it's a hard one. I don't think you ever really fully recover from something like that. I think it can grab you at any time. I remember I was doing on my last tour. I came out of the show and there were some people waiting outside after the show and there was a Sri Lankan family there and the dad of the family said, I really enjoyed the show, but he sounded just like my dad.
Oh, wow.
And I finished the conversation, but it was as much as I could do to finish the conversation without crying in front of him.
Oh, mate.
It was, you know, and it completely caught me by surprise.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's things like that. And, you know, my mum, she will talk about things that dad did to her like that happened yesterday. You know,
right.
And so, and those are positive things as well as negative things. She, you'll have a chat with her. She'll start talking about something he did where he's flirting with some woman at a party. And right. She'll talk about it like she's planning on chatting to him about it this evening when he gets home from work. And I'm like, Mum, there is no point in getting angry about this anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no,
it's like this is totally needless. it's an ongoing thing. And the truth is sometimes I go the other way, mate. In all honesty, like,
oh, really?
When you get busy with work,
yeah,
you get on with stuff and then I'll realize that I haven't thought about Dad for a bit and feel bad about that. Do you know what I mean? But you do have to carry on with your life.
Yeah, of course.
But,
yeah.
Sometimes I go, oh shit, I don't consciously sit down to have a think about Dad moment, but when he does pop into my mind, I think, oh God, I've been getting on with things and haven't thought about it for a while. You almost feel guilty about that because when your dad passes away or when somebody close to you passes away, you want to remember them forever and you want to be celebrating their life or thinking about them forever. But the truth is life gets in the way of that. And you
of
know,
course it does,
you know,
yeah.
You can't help that. And so, you know, it's just one of them things.
No, mate. But it must add to your success that, you know, you've come through all that sort of shit throughout your life. And then, and to get where you are now must really add to it. You must have that a massive sense of achievement, you know. And I think that was what that would your parents would be proud as well. They'd go, "Wow, despite everything, look what he's done." You know?
Yeah, I guess. Well, the truth is, Rich, you don't ever really feel like you've made it, do you? Do you know I mean, I feel like I feel like I'm muddling along and waiting to get found out. Is the truth of it? Do you know what I mean? It's like
loads of people say that. Yeah, they always thought, yeah.
And that's not to say I don't enjoy it. I love my job and I love what I do. But at the same time, I don't ever think to myself, "Fucking hell, Rob, you are smashing it." But do you know what I mean? You don't think.
No,
like
I suppose no. Of course
like
you don't.
You just
of course
think,
you don't.
You just think. I just think. Fucking hell, that didn't go shit. I'm gonna do this next thing, and I hope I don't get found out on that one. That is honestly my attitude. You know, I think that's everyone's attitude to it, regardless.
I think I think you're right, man.
I don't know. It's like, who knows? I sometimes think to myself, if my family had not gone through what they'd gone through, I don't think I would have been a comedian. And I'm not talking about it. About the wiring, and you know, people talk about how we're different in the head or whatever. I just think I would have followed a more orthodox path. Do you know what I mean? I wasn't if I hadn't been thrown off the route that our family was headed on, I don't know if I would have gone, "Oh, I'm just fuck it. I'm just going to give it a go." Do you know what I mean? I just don't think I would have done any of that. So I just think, without getting into the cliches of everything happens for a reason, I do think you are shaped by those experiences. You know, I often say if I didn't have a lazy eye, I wouldn't have been a comedian, because I just think it makes you a bit of an outsider. And so you have a different way of looking at, I wasn't one of the, I used to get the piss taken out of me about it all the time. And so that puts you in a different social standing. Do you know what I mean? And I think that,
you
look at things, I mean, it physically makes you look at things differently, but it does make you look at things differently. You have a different position. And so I think all of those things contribute, if you want to pronounce it correctly. And then, but the thing that I think, the one thing that I think I feel the most happy about is my mum getting her being on TV or her enjoying the success and all that kind of stuff. I think that, I reckon I went through 2 years of staying in a bed and breakfast. My mum, my brother and I were in the same room, maybe 18 months. And I reckon my mum cried herself to sleep 80 to 90% of those nights. And so you sort of think about that. I mean, you think I think to myself, well, my mum's doing this, that, and the other. Like, she's so happy in how things turned. Do you know what I mean? She's so happy for that. And I think to myself, well, fucking hell, that is an amazing thing for her.
Well, that goes above everything else. Yeah, I mean, I mean, her life is completely turned around. That is beautiful. That really is. And your brother's a top lad as well.
Yeah, he is. Have you gigged him at all?
Yeah. I did his gig in Crawley.
Oh, Crawley, yeah.
He's a top lad. Really, really good. Yeah, funny, man. It's funny, isn't it? It's like, Kyle Kinane, this American comic.
Yes, I know Kyle,
And he said the same thing. He said, I'm from the suburbs. I didn't have to struggle. Yeah. You know, he goes, it's really hard to kick against anything when everyone's going, oh, I want to start a rock band. We're going to be anarchy. We're going to be this. And your mum's like, just use a basement. He's like, what? No, wait.
Yeah, takes you down to the shop the next day, buys you guitars.
Yeah, exactly that. You go, listen, you've got to wrap this up by 11, but crack on, guys. He's like, no, I've got nothing to fight against.
I
mean, that's it. We didn't, I always felt I was different, but I didn't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. I was picked on at school, and then I was picking on people, and I just didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. And because of that, that's why I became a comedian, that, not feeling like I fit in anywhere. And then I met comedians, and I go, these are my people. None of us fit in, and we're all weird, and we're all, I don't know. Yeah, funny, isn't it? I don't know. I would have just been a van driver from Kent. No disrespect to any van drivers Kent.
Kent van drivers are the best. I mean,
they are the best.
They are very much up there, aren't they, as van drivers go. So
they're the pinnacle of the van driving community.
Yeah. 100%. Big up the Kent van drivers, man.
And you got your hip hop as well. You're a big fan of hip hop.
Yeah, I love it, man.
I got into it a bit when I was a kid, because everyone else was. I kind of knew bits and bobs.
Yeah.
But it's only recently I've been going back and having a look. And my son bought me Midnight Marauders from
a Right. Yeah, it's an amazing album. I think that the way that you're describing it is true of a lot of people with hip hop in terms of, you know, of our age, I mean, who like were into it when they were younger and then sort of thought it sort of got away from them a bit. And then now they're kind of later on, they've got back to it. And I think that a lot of people have that experience, but I just, there's something about, and I know that you're a music fan, but like I think there's something about, I don't know, the pleasure of listening to music. And the thing about hip hop for me is the whole culture, everything about it, I just absolutely love, you know. And you can be, the thing I like about it, as I guess is true of a lot of music, is I have nerdish tendencies and hip hop rewards that. You know, if you know where these breaks have come from and you've studied bars and lyrics and shit like that, and you know that Nas spit this bar on this track and it came out on this colour vinyl and all this wanky shit. You know what I mean? That's actually that attitude is rewarded in hip hop culture. Do you know what I mean? So it's like
it's
something that, you know, I really love. I do find that I don't know, man. It's Lisa finds it very, very, you know, sometimes it depends on the type of music, but sometimes I'll be listening to hip hop and Lisa will look across at me like, I can't believe a grown man thinks this is music. And then other times, like when it's something like Midnight Marauders, like Tribal, The Roots or a band like that, she actually will say, actually, this is quite good. But all of that kind of, you know, the real, I guess the kind of the stuff that people stereotypically attach to hip hop, you know, that kind of beats and like crime raps and all that kind of shit. She just looks at me like, I can't believe you would put this on. It's insane.
Get off the bonnet of the car. Pick up your fibers.
100%.
But that's what I love about, I love music that changes the landscape. So hip hop exploded and it changed the way people dressed. It brought back into the limelight people like Herbie Hancock and not because they were getting in on it, but the riffs and the breaks that they were it was theirs, you know. So I got most of my musical education from hip hop and listening to the blues and all that sort of thing. Because you go, well, where's, because you'll put something on and someone will go, well, you know, that's blah, blah, blah. And you go, really? And then you go looking. And that's what I love. And that's why I love music. I have music on all the time. I was talking to Scroobius Pip about this. And we were saying, because a lot of people I grew up with now, they're all racist and homophobic and they're all sexist and they're horrible. And you're like, how did you grow up like that? But I didn't, but I grew up with you. Yeah, and I think it was to do with music, you know?
I think you're totally right, man.
Listening to people like Erasure and Jimmy Somerville and Frankie Goes to Hollywood. So you knew about the gay scene, and then you'd listen to hip hop on the blues and you'd know about that. And I think music is so important. Are your lads into it?
They're not into hip hop in the slightest. No. It's an absolute bane of my existence. But I don't know if it's them kicking against, I don't know. I mean, they find it just utterly boring, to be honest with you. Like, they are into music, but they're into, I mean, my eldest son, he's starting to have a bit more of an actual interest, whereas the other two will just listen to whatever's on the radio a lot or whatever happens to come on and they sort of get into. But even the hip hop that my eldest son listens to is shit. So, do you know what I mean? So it's like,
is he listening to modern hip hop? Is he?
Well, not. I mean, I like modern, but it's a specific type of it that he's. I mean, he's just into just this, like, it's not for me, Rich. I've got to be open minded about it. It was not made for me. And if I liked it, the people that made it would probably absolutely be fucking devastated that a fat dad in his 40s was into their music. Do you know what I mean? So
that's it. There's got to be that generational thing. Exactly. We're supposed to turn around and go, no, oh, that's shit. Exactly. Oh, you don't get it, Dad. Yeah. Whatever.
I think they'll be absolutely delighted to know that I hate it.
So what's that? Are you working on anything while you're on lockdown? You got any projects going on?
Well, we're about to do this second series of this show, The Ranganation, that I did for BBC Two last year.
Oh, yeah.
And we're trying to figure out, I guess what incarnation that'll take because of obvious limitations. So I'm working on that at the moment. And then just various bits and pieces, man. I'm taking the opportunity to try and write some stuff. But the truth is, my good intentions of, I mean, I was so aspirational at the beginning of this lockdown. I mean,
same, yeah.
The things I was going to get done, do you know what I mean? It's just, I mean, I know this is the case of everybody, but I really did. I was thinking I'm going to structure my day, I'm going to have this, that, and the other done. And to be honest with you, mate, it's actually contributed a bit to my anxiety because I like to feel like I'm cracking on with stuff, as I'm sure you do. You know, we all want to feel like we're working on stuff and we're getting bits done. And then what would happen is I would get to the end of a day and I'd feel like I hadn't done anything and I'd start to go to bed like shitting myself about how I hadn't done anything. Like, do you know what I mean? I mean, it was only and it's only when I saw a tweet or a couple of people said something like, it is okay to just get through your days on occasion. Do you know what I mean? You don't have to be working on a novel. You don't have to be working on a screenplay or whatever the whole time that we're on lockdown. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
exactly, man.
It is enough just to fucking get through. Because the thing is, the other thing is you've got this anxiety of the circumstances running in the background the whole time. Do you know what I mean? And so it is going to affect you, even if you're not actively thinking about it. It is in the background. So I think you've just got to be kind to yourself in that way. Do you know what I mean? Without sounding too wanky, but I do think you do have to just go, oh, do you know what? If I've done fuck all today, I've done fuck all. Do you know what I mean? But
we're in a weird situation.
Do you know what I mean? Let's just try and get
I keep seeing comedians, they're all doing live this and this, that, and the other. And I'm just sitting there going, I've only been up 10 minutes. And I don't know. Oh God. I haven't written a note of the, written anything to do with my book or anything like that. But yeah, like you say, you've just got to let yourself, it's, you know, you've got to be like kind to yourself and everyone's upset and you'll have waves of euphoria, you'll have waves of sadness. And you just, like you say, just got to get through your day.
Yeah. And I remember like, you know, sometimes the best things happen, you know, the best things creatively happen. I'm talking about, you know, in our job specifically, like when you're not thinking about it. And I remember like, you know, I've been struggling to write tour shows or whatever. And then I thought, fuck it, I'm not going to think about it for a week. And then 3 days into it, suddenly this fully formed routine pops into my head, and you sort of think, well, actually, if I'd have chained myself to my desk and be agonizing over this, I probably wouldn't have come up with any of this. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you can never figure out. The weird thing about what we do is it doesn't proportionately reward the amount of time you throw into it, really. Do you know what I mean? You could spend a whole day trying to write stuff and come up with fuck all, and then you might be doing the washing up or something. And in 10 minutes, you come up with this whole fucking sitcom idea. Do you know what I mean? So it's totally unpredictable.
Yeah, I've done that with Jade. We just sat having a cup of tea in the morning having breakfast.
Yeah.
And then she'll say, oh, I've got to come up with this idea for this thing. Yeah. And then I'll just go, what about this? Blah, 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 blah. And she's like, what the fuck? I'm going, I don't even know where that came from. But like you say, if you sit down and go, right, today I'm going to write this, I'll come up with nothing. So I used to hear that. People go, oh, I write 2 hours a day. I put most of it in the bin. Like, well, that just sounds like a waste of time.
I just
don't work that way. I'm not very academic, so I can't. I don't sit and do that, which is...
No, and I also, if I sat down for 2 hours, I'd have to factor in 6 hours of being distracted into that. There's no way that I could be focused for that amount of time, man.
I can't do that. 2 hours? Are you kidding? And then you've got your young kids as well, and they're running around.
Yeah, I mean, I can't... I basically decamped to the garage because it's the only way I can get any work done. I mean, right now, the problem is the internet's not good enough in the garage, so I'm going to have to come back in whenever I'm doing anything that requires internet. But like, if I'm around the kit, by the way, what I just said was the most boring, I reckon it's the most boring 20 seconds of talking I think anyone's ever committed to record.
I'm going to have that out for the promo, guys.
That's
going in the trailer.
Yeah, I have to come back inside because the internet doesn't provide, the internet signal's not quite the requisite level for me to get to do what I need to do, Rich. You know? Fucking hell. What made me think that was okay to say out loud? Jesus
Christ.
But anyway, the point is that if I'm anywhere near the kids trying to do work, it just doesn't happen. Do you know what I mean?
And the other thing as well, because Jade's got, she's got stuff going on. So there's like phone calls being made and meetings being set up. Right. And then if I've got something as well, we have to be stood there going, babe, I'm going to, we have to try and find corners of the flat to do these. It's first world problems, isn't it? It's like, there's other things. I mean, at least we got our health. We're not, one of us isn't in hospital. So
sure. But I mean, I think you have to let yourself off for that. I mean, I know like it is first world problems, but it is still a problem. You know, when people go, You know when you go, oh, my Wi-Fi's fucked, and they go, you know there's people starving in Africa, and they go, yeah, but I wouldn't be able to tell you because I can't get on the internet to read that news story. It's still a problem for me. Yeah. So it's all right if I talk about it.
You sort my internet out, and then I'll have a look at that. Yeah, let exactly. me get. Oh, mate, it's funny. I used to get really bogged down with. I still do to a certain extent, knowing that there's atrocities happening around the world, like people are starving, and there's all the stuff in Syria, and then I got to a point. I'm like, I can't change it. Me sitting up all night worrying in bed doesn't help them and doesn't change it. I don't know what to do.
It's such a difficult thing because, you know, when you actually engage properly with all of the things that are going on, you actually start to think, well, how the fuck can I, with a clear conscience, live my life and not have it devoted to try and sort something out? Do you know what I mean?
Like,
you know, why am I, how are we doing comedy when shit like that's going on? You know, like you just, it's very, very difficult. And I think you're absolutely right. You have to go, well, I can't do anything. And then if you try, you know what I found is like, I had that same thing. And then I actually think it's doing something, you know, doing something locally or doing something that you can affect some sort of change. So for example, I went for a similar thing, and then we've got this food bank and this homeless centre down the road from me, Crawley Open House, and I just started helping them out. And that's not
brilliant.
That's not sorting out Syria, but at the same time, it is, you are doing something. Do you know what I mean? And like,
I
guess, do you know what I mean? By the way, I'm not putting myself up forward as a saint here for doing that, but you know what I mean? You know what I mean?
But that, I've said that before. If we can't sort out the bigger picture, we can't sort out, there's nothing we can do to help the people of Syria. Like, we can't go over there and sort things out. We're not Bono, but we like you say, doing things in our little area, affecting change in that way, and hopefully then that spreads out to more people, and then they do something else, and then and that, like, you've hit the nail on the head. That's exactly, that's all you can do.
Is
sort out your own little area. That brings us neatly down back to what's going on now. People are looking out for each other. We now know our neighbours. We didn't know them before.
And I know, it's mad, isn't it?
Just putting, there was a note put through the door saying, look, if you need anything, give us a shout. And then I dropped them a text going, yeah, cool, if you need anything as well, give us a shout. And and I think those little changes are happening, which is a beautiful thing.
I mean, I thought our neighbours were pricks, but since this, I've had it confirmed, they are. But at least I know for definite, do you know what I mean?
You're going to start getting all King Gary on them. Start fucking up their barbecues. That looked great fun to play, that sinister neighbour.
That was amazing.
How good was that?
That was so good. I mean, I love Tom Davison. When he told me about his part, I just thought, like, it's going to be such a laugh to play that. Do you know what I mean? And we did have a lot of fun.
You play it so well. You're so... You just play it just right. It's really cool. It's good to see. It's funny. I knew Tom. I met Tom years ago through comedy.
Yeah.
And I remember we worked on Bob Hoskins' last film.
Right.
It was called Outside Bet, and it was a mate of mine's book he wrote called The Mumper about this racehorse.
Right.
And there's me and Tom. We were playing the bookies at this race course, and I see Tom, I'm like, what are you doing here? He's like, well, I'm in this, aren't I? And he's just this lolloping giant dude being this, it's really funny. And I think my elbow made it to the cut, but Tom was there. So he's come on leaps of, he's come so far, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's him. I mean, he's got a proper work ethic, and he's supremely talented. Do you know what I mean? He's a really good bloke. Do you know what I mean? I think that when you see someone who's successful, it's part of you that wants them to be an arsehole, but it's actually, you know, you just sort of think there's, you need to balance it out somehow. But he's actually a really nice bloke.
He's a top dude, isn't he?
Yeah, he's lovely.
Absolutely. And you do you do League of Their Own as well? Is it?
Yes. Yeah. Regular on League of Their Own. Yeah.
Do you enjoy that?
I do. I love it. I really love it, except for all of the physical challenges on it. All of those those bits I absolutely hate. And we always do it at the end of the episodes, like when we're doing the record.
Oh, do you?
and it just hangs over me the entire show. Particularly if it's a really bad one, I just can't, you know, you're supposed to be having a laugh.
Yeah. And you've got this shadow of impending doom.
Yeah, it's just
looming
it's
over you.
Absolutely horrendous. And people say to me, you can't be scared every single time. And I go, I am, mate. I absolutely dreading it every single time I do it. Like, it's awful.
Well, you don't look like it. You look like you're having a great time, Rob.
Oh, thanks, mate. Thank you.
You got enough toilet roll, mate?
Toilet roll we're all good for. We're sort of holding up. You know, we're all good. The biggest issue for us in this house, to be honest with you, has been breakfast cereal. Because I'm a massive breakfast cereal fan, and I've passed that on to the kids. They smash through absolute tons of it. And so that has been the biggest issue for us in our house. We're currently running low. So we're we've had to have a family meeting about it because basically Lisa doesn't like the kids eating sugary cereal, right? So they don't have Cocoa Pops or anything like that unless we're on holiday. But then on holiday, they get all excited because they're allowed to have whatever cereals they want. We've had to sit Lisa down and say to her, look, it's a global pandemic. We're on lockdown. Can we put forward a motion that we relax the sugary cereals rule just while we're going through this? And she's
just
accepted.
Just so this blows over.
She's accepted, and we're absolutely drowning in Cocoa Pops day after day.
Do you know what? It's funny. We don't really have cereal here either.
Right.
But the other day I came in, I bought one box of Cheerios.
Yeah.
And I left them on the side, and Jade and Paul have gone bananas for them. They go, why don't we have these more often? I go, because trying to be healthy.
Cereal is the one, mate. It's so good. Mate, the thing about it is it's delicious, and the prep time on it is beautiful. Do you know what I mean? It's literally the window between thinking I fancy a bowl of cereal and being halfway through that bowl of cereal is about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, halfway through, I'm gonna have another bowl.
Mate, it's amazing. What a laugh.
We've been using proper milk as well. Because we had oat milk and all that for ages, almond milk and all that kind of gubbins, which we still got. But I'll be coming in with a couple of bottles of green. I don't
just
care.
Living it up.
Romesh, this has been amazing. Thank you so much, mate.
Mate, thank you so much. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you, mate, as always.
And you, man. You take care. I've got nothing but love for you. Thanks, man.
Cheers, mate. Insane in the
membrane. Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.